Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Chris Buccanani. Chris, how are you doing, my friend? You ready to talk some Penn State football and Penn State hoops today?
I am, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here with you and with all of our listeners. Let's get into it.
All right. Well, let's start with hoops. Chris, we've got a winning streak on the road. That's two in a row for the Nittany Lion Hoopsters.
And I believe I saw online, and now I'm going to forget the reporter who tweeted it and not be able to give credit, but I believe it has never happened that Penn State has had back-to-back road wins in the Big Ten of a 12-plus point margin.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, this is a really interesting season for Penn State basketball, Jim, which I realize is at best a tertiary interest for a lot of our fans. But I do think there's a sentiment out there that folks would like to get interested if they feel like there's a product on the court that's worthy of their time and attention. And if you're not too familiar with the circumstances around this season, Mike Rhodes, the coach who we hired from Virginia Commonwealth, was put in a really tough situation because of the way the transfer portal has affected basketball. You see so much roster turnover from season to season. And Penn State pretty much had its entire roster gutted after Micah Shrewsbury left. So when Mike Rhodes got here, he had to build the group that he's coaching right now from scratch, just kind of cobble it together, managed to keep a couple of guys in the fold, but more or less brought a few of his players with him from VCU. And then just around the country, you pick and choose the best you can get out of the transfer portal. And let's just be honest, Penn State is not sitting up towards the top of the pecking order in terms of access to available, quote, free agent talent when it comes to the basketball offseason. So I always thought there was going to be a pretty steep curve for judging this first season for Mike Rhodes. And there have certainly been some down spots, like losing at home to Bucknell. But I think we can now feel pretty confident with some of the wins this guy has gotten in terms of getting this group to gel and play together as a team, that we maybe have somebody who can coach and develop talent and do more with less, which are all qualities you need as a head coach at Penn State. And again, like a win over number 11, wins over Michigan and Ohio State, two-game winning streak, including Penn State's first win at Indiana since 2014. I'm feeling pretty good about what this portends for the future of the program.
I am also, and first of all, I agree with you that this is not the top priority for Penn State sports fans. Between football and you have, you know, an exceptional hockey program, a great wrestling program. But I do believe that there is this pent-up demand for good basketball. Spring of last year, when things were coming together, Penn State down the stretch looking like a tournament team, it drew interest. But now, you gave the background of this team where Mike Rhodes had to just piece it together from scratch. One of the things that I have this theory that sports teams have to learn how to win, including learning how to win on the road, which is tough to do in Big Ten basketball. It's interesting to me that it took till last week for them, for this hoops team, to get their first road win, which they did at Rutgers. Then a couple days later, over the weekend, they get that second road win against Indiana. I think they had to get over that hump. And when I say learn how to win, I know that's kind of a silly concept, Chris, but I think it, when you put together an entirely new team as this group did, they don't have a legacy to fall back on. It's like Alabama football. They know how to win year to year to year, and there's a carryover because there's so much carryover of the players, coaching staff. But when it goes completely new, I think you have to learn how to win, and you almost feel that happening as this season progresses. I'm not saying it's going to be a straight path upward for this team, there's still going to be some of those games that you're just shaking your head saying, oh my goodness, you know, like we did when they lost to Bucknell at home. But a couple things I want to point out from this game over the weekend at Indiana, this team, another thing that sounds blatantly obvious, if this team shoots well, they win. And that's not something they do on a consistent basis. But this game, Chris, they shot over 50% from three-point range.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. And, you know, Jim, just to touch on that point, again, just going back to, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm making excuses for the guy, but you have to be realistic in the way you're assessing his job performance year one. This is not a team that really has a three-point sniper like we've had in the past. And so you've got to believe that that's going to be one of the top priorities. And again, this is just the transfer portal has nibbled around the edges of college football, but it's completely transformed college basketball. And just to shout out the Penn State women's team as well, the transfer portal has been the difference in Penn State women's basketball making the comeback that it has this season. And so if this offseason, getting somebody who is just a real threat as a primary three-point shooter becomes one of the priorities for Mike Rhodes. Like, that's going to be a big, big piece towards building this program. And the reason I say this is just because I think you're right. Penn State fans just want to hear enough good news that their curiosity is piqued and they can engage with this team.
Well, the other part to it, you talk about getting that three-point sniper in. They brought in a couple guys that they hoped would be those guys. And this game against Indiana, those guys played. Jameel Brown, okay, he was brought in to shoot three-point shots, and he hasn't been successful. This game he was. I'm just looking at the stat sheet. He was 4 or 5 from three-point shots. I'm no expert, but I think that's pretty good, Chris. Zach Hick is the same way. He was hitting the threes. But I also think an absolutely huge shout-out here to Ace Baldwin, okay? First of all, he filled up the box score. 8 of 14 from the field, 3 of 5 from three-point range. What was his total? 22 points, 8 assists. But if you watch the game, perhaps more importantly, he played all 40 minutes of the game, okay? And people talk about Kanye Clary, the leading scorer, was out for these last couple games. And by the way, no, they are not a better team without him, okay? For anyone who wants to bring that up. But what I think happened without Clary out there, it really gave Ace Baldwin the reins to the team. And once they got the lead in the second half, essentially Mike Rhodes and this guy's teammates just said, here, Ace, you take the ball. You keep it in your hands. And that completely eliminated the opportunity for Indiana to put some pressure defense on and force turnovers. The game was in good hands. And when you often see a team in the second half with a double-digit lead, they start to sit on the lead. The offense gets completely stagnant. That never happened in this game, Chris. And that was all because of Ace Baldwin. This is a pretty special player.
Yeah, yeah. And who one of the guys I mentioned who followed Rhodes from VCU and looks like he can be a cornerstone type player. He looks like he can have that kind of Jalen Pickett quality to him, right? That you can build around him. And so I keep harping on this point about what we can learn from about Mike Rhodes, the coach, the in terms of being able to coach his guys from an X's and O's standpoint to develop talent. What is this telling us about his potential to improve Penn State's spot in the Big Ten pecking order as we go forward? And I'll note that he's already secured the commitment from the highest rated recruit in Penn State basketball history, which again is kind of a low bar to vault over, but nevertheless, you go to war with the army you got. I really like the fact that this team, and you mentioned they were even undermanned, went to IU, which is one of the, I would argue, blue blood programs in college basketball, and had the roster befitting that status. I mean, there were a lot of four-star and I think maybe even a five-star guy in the starting five for the Hoosiers this past weekend. So at every position, and even deep down onto the bench, Indiana outstrips Penn State in terms of the talent that they have. And nevertheless, you talk about learning to win. Rhodes had those guys dialed in, and they just went and played a really good basketball game and came out with the dub. And so you're always going to have to do more with less as the head coach at Penn State. Now, if you can split the difference, like I talked about, bring in a little bit better talent on the recruiting trail, get some hits in the transfer portal so that your less isn't maybe as bad as it was, like, let's say, back in the Jerry Dunn years or the Ed DeChellis years, which you're just not going to have a lot of success with. That's great. But you're never going to have a superstar like Kansas or Duke style roster. You're not even going to be able to recruit at the level of an Illinois or a Michigan State, probably. But if you can coach well and you can develop talent and you can teach guys to play together, then you can finish in the top half of the conference, which we have seen is enough to get you an invite to the dance.
And the other part to this formula in basketball, as opposed to football, in football, players have to stick around for 3 years. Now, they may not stick around on your own team, but they have to stay in college for 3 years. In basketball, not the case. You have these one-and-done players. And the way to win, if you're not a Kansas or a Duke, where every year they will bring in the very top, the cream of the crop, but they'll only stay there for 1 year. If you're a Penn State, the formula is you bring in guys who will be here for 2, 3, 4 years. And at that point, you're having seniors on your team. You're having 22 and 23-year-olds playing against 18-year-olds. Now, maybe the 18-year-olds are phenomenal athletes and going to be the first-round picks when the NBA draft comes around. But if you have guys who stick around for a couple of years, who stay in the program, and having gotten a chance to speak to Mike Rhodes, he really comes across, Chris, as a high-quality guy who's looking out for the best interest of his players, not just on the court, but off. He's building something there, building a program. I'm a big fan. I hope it keeps going, Chris. All right, that is it for quarter number one in college basketball. I promise you, come quarter two, we're going to talk football. Stay tuned for that. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He is Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galante. This is quarter number two of our show. And as promised, we're gonna switch back to football here, Chris. And here's my question for this show. The rest of the show is going to be, how do you fix college football? My inspiration for this was an article I read, which, by the way, I'm not sure is very well done article, but it was somebody's plan to fix college football. I sent the article on to you just to review it, to kind of get the idea of what we were looking for here. And the gentleman who wrote this article, he had his 10 points of how to fix college football. But I think the important first question to this, Chris, is it broken?
I think we've discussed this before, and I do still think the answer is like a qualified yes. There are definitely some aspects of it that are problematic. My big pet peeve is the transfer portal. And there are two aspects to that. There's, is the transfer portal, quote unquote, fair in terms of the lot in life of college football players? And from that perspective, I think you can make a strong argument that the answer is yes. Is it good for fans? Do I enjoy the fact that it has essentially stripped the human element out of the sport? And it tells me as a fan, hey, listen, you should have absolutely no care for or connection to or attachment with the human beings who are putting on the Penn State uniform. This is Jerry Seinfeld. You're rooting for shirts. You should only care about the brand of your school and the actual people, the flesh and blood occupying those spots on the roster. They're entirely interchangeable and it's none of your business. Don't care about the human beings. Just care about the logo on the helmet or lack of if you're a Penn State fan. And that's it. So I don't like it. I've never been like that. What has distinguished college football for me from the NFL, which I also love, I'm not one of these people who pits one versus the other. I love them both. But I have always loved the fact that in college football, you are choosing my alma mater. You're a Penn Stater, just like I am. The life experience of a student athlete on the football team is a lot different from the rank and file undergrad, but on a certain level, when you're sitting in the student section for those 4 years, those guys out on the field share a common experience with you. You're all Penn State students, and when you graduate, you're all Penn State alumni, and that's a bond that you have for life. So a guy can play for five different NFL teams over the course of his career. You know, I always love to give my friend Brandon Noble a lot of grief because he played for the Cowboys and the Redskins, and I'm an Eagles fan, but the guy was doing a job. He and I are both Penn Staters and we're Nittany Lions for life. And I loved that connection you felt with the players on the team because the quality of the football certainly isn't the same as you get on the professional level. And that distinguishing factor to me was one of the things that I loved about it. I think a lot of the eccentricities of college football were features, not bugs. And that was one of them.
And Chris, maybe folks will say I'm putting on my blue and white sunglasses as a Penn State fan, but I think James Franklin has done a good job of creating a culture here at Penn State where it isn't the mass exodus going on every year like you see at other schools.
There's no doubt, and it's all the more remarkable because that has become the norm at a lot of places.
Yes. And in fact, yes, throughout college football, I'm calling that the norm. And I'm with you as much as I appreciate the player standpoint, which is every other student in the country has the right to transfer colleges anytime they want. Football players should have that right also. However, that doesn't change the fact that it changes this game that I love. Now, so how do you fix that, Chris?
Well, and let me just point out, too, the only reason why we're talking about any of this is money, right? It's about fair distribution of the money. And the only reason this stuff is worth money is because it's valuable to us as the fans. So you always have to make decisions with your product quality in mind. And this is one of the reasons why the NFL has been so successful. They have been relentlessly focused on product quality and all of the disputes between labor and ownership and management have always been resolved in favor of maximizing the value of the product on the field and the appeal to fans. And so if you come up with something that makes it less and less appealing to me as a fan, and I don't mean me personally, just the theoretical fans, you're going to start diminishing the value. And then the whole nature of the debate over who gets to divide the big pot of money starts to fall apart because the pot shrinks over time. So the powers that be in college football, and this is one of the problems, we don't even know exactly who those people are. We're in the midst of a debate over who is going to control the future of college football. They need to consider that, yeah, this is about money, so it's a business conversation. And so you do need to think about how are you going to continue to put on the field and on television sets and on everybody's devices a product that's going to compete against the other things that are vying for their attention, both in the sports world and beyond. So it's an important conversation. It's not just a question of is it fair to the kids or not. You gotta strive for fairness. But, you know, your job, my job, everybody's job, Jim, there's a push-pull between what's good for the bottom line and what's fair to the workers as human beings.
Well, what you need to do, I believe, is, yes, still acknowledge the players, but not risk the money, is what you're talking about. Now, one minority...
And it's in the players' interest, ultimately, to not risk the money.
Right. But not necessarily that player today. So, you know, I keep using Judkins, the running back from Ole Miss, as my example in a lot of this. Ole Miss is known for giving out a lot of transfer portal money to bring players in. Judkins, hey, he doesn't care about that legacy or the next generation. And I'm not, you know, dumping on him. You or I would do the same thing. If Ohio State offers more money for him to transfer there, why not take that? That's a good business decision for him. Now, the legacy going forward may not be as good for the players coming through if those TV contracts start to dry up. The fact is, right now, the TV contracts are not drying up, Chris. They are getting bigger and bigger. So that's why I always feel obligated to ask the question, is it really broken? And we as fans, or you and I, who we always describe ourselves as sort of being part of the media, and we complain about these things, you know, the question always is it a valid complaint? Now, the other part to all this is everything kind of, there's a crossover. It's hard for us to separate the transfer portal from NIL, for example. It's hard for us to separate any of this from money, because that's the bottom line is the bottom line. Here's one of the proposals that came up that would affect the transfer portal. And people have brought this up in different ways. I'm not sure if players would need to be employees to do this, but what would you think of a scholarship contract for high school players? Now, players wouldn't be obligated to go this route, but what if I said, okay, Chris, you're coming to Penn State. Here's your scholarship paperwork. Included in it is a clause that says you're obligated to play at Penn State for the next 3 years. Not 1 year, but 3 years.
And in my opinion, going in that direction is the way it needs to go. Because I think, again, this is just my pet peeve. I want to have some stability. I want to feel like I know who is going to be on the roster. I want to know who the Nittany Lions are. And I think most fan bases are probably like that as well. Now, again, it's about if you're going to give something up, you got to get something. And so if you're an athlete and you're giving up some of that mobility, the schools have to be giving back in some way. And so this is where the devil comes in, right, in the details. But I think it needs to go in that direction. And you use the E word, Jim, employee. And so as we talk about how to fix college football, and you ask me, you know, be prepared today to talk about how you would improve the sport. I really think there are two directions. I can and will give you my pie in the sky. Like, how would I just fix it to make it as close to what we knew for most of our lives as the sport we fell in love with, but also make it more equitable for the participants? And then also say, but I think we're going to go in the direction where some of this stuff may or may not even be deemed legal, but it's definitely not going to work in the world of college football we have and the world we're going to have. So we can talk about some fixes there too. And just to talk about measuring the success or health of the sport based on the size of television viewing audiences. From one perspective, I think that's good. You can look at the top line numbers on the most watched games of this season, and you can see that there is a large and potentially even growing audience for the biggest brands in college football. I don't think that's a good measure for the health of the sport for two reasons. Number one, if you look at that list, you're going to see the same teams recurring over and over and over again. And a lot of them are Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, Georgia, throw in some Penn State and Tennessee in there, maybe a USC. it's clustered around some of the top brands. And one of the reasons why is because those numbers are being inflated by casual viewers. Those are people who know these brand names vaguely. They'll tune in, they'll watch a football game for the spectacle and for the hype, and then they'll disengage and they'll walk away. So in terms of, is that representative of a sport that's healthy from the top to the bottom? Does it show something that's sustainable? Does it represent consumers who are then to go forward and do the things that support why college football exists in the first place? Are they going to make donations to their alma mater? They're not, you know, casual fans not making a donation to Penn State or Ohio State because they watch the Penn State Ohio State game. They may not even buy apparel. They may not engage with advertisers. They may do nothing other than show up and watch the game. So it's a positive data point for what it is, but it shouldn't be used as the be-all, end-all of indicating whether or not the sport is healthy.
Well, Chris, I think we could agree that players staying with a program longer than 1 year and moving on would be a good thing. And I think anything that would get you towards that would be a good thing. And as players, you know, we might look at the top of the pecking order, the guy who could make money no matter where he goes because he's that good. That's not the majority of players. I think if you said to a payment to those players also, what are the players going to get, you ask. I think payment has to be part of that. Chris, we're going to pick up this conversation when we get back. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He is Chris. I'm Jim. It's quarter number three. We're talking about college football. Specifically, what would we do to fix college football? And there's so many issues going on. Let's talk about this a little bit more, Chris. When we finished, we were talking about, I proposed to you the idea of a 3-year commitment for scholarship players. Now, there can be models where the player does not have to buy into that. He could choose freedom. Now, why would somebody commit to 3 years and short circuit their freedom? Well, a couple things. Number one, how about paying them a bit? It's a billion-dollar industry. Now, if you're the number one quarterback in the country coming in, maybe paying a player $50,000 a year doesn't matter to you. But I suspect it would matter to a lot of the players. Hey, if I have a guaranteed income before NIL of, say, $50,000, hey, who knows what's going to happen in my career? I may not be a star. I may not be an NFL player. I may ride the bench, but I'm guaranteed that the school has guaranteed me this money along with my scholarship and that value for the next 3 years. I'm going to take that. So I think that would fix a lot of the issues. Now, I don't know of the legalities to it. Would you have to, you know, is that contract valid? Would somebody fight it? How would that work? I imagine you could create some exceptions to the rule if both the player and the school says, hey, we're all right with it ending. Essentially, we'll release you if you want out of your contract, just like any other contract. You and I could have a contract, Chris, but if we both agree not to do it, so that can move on. So I think that could help with this portal issue. But what you have is now NIL. I want to talk directly about that and the effect it has. And I find it fascinating when I read some of these ideas, like, limit how much NIL players can get. No, that's not going to fly.
No, that'll never. That's one of those things where you can say in a fantasy world, it's fun to talk about. There is no way that is ever going to happen. That's like super illegal.
it can't be done. Now, my question is, though, and this is going to court, by the way, the attorneys general from Tennessee and Virginia are fighting the NCAA. The NCAA is finally going after a couple schools, including Tennessee, by saying that they are using NIL to induce a player to either attend from high school or transfer to the school. That is against the rules. We know it's happening. It's happening a lot. Is that enforceable, Chris? Is that something that the NCAA could go after these teams and enforce that? And should they? Or should it be just totally, hey, NIL is outside the realm of the NCAA, nothing they could do about it?
I think the answer to both questions is the same, really, Jim, to me, and it comes down to selective enforcement. At this point, I think the NCAA is so far over their skis and have proven so inadequate to the task of managing or policing the sport in any meaningful way. If you are an institution that's being investigated by the NCAA, if you're Tennessee right now, you're like, what are you guys kidding me? There's 65 programs out there of consequence that are doing the same things we are or worse. You've given us no guidelines and you're just picking on us, right? Give me a break. You know, this is not like your traffic cop sitting by the side of the road and there were 50 cars speeding and we're the only one you pulled over. You're supposed to be the governing body of the sport. You know, you're supposed to be the equivalent of the commissioner's office in a professional sport. And so to me, it's the same question of should they be enforcing it? Like, no. Like, it's so profoundly unfair and so ineffectual that it's probably actually doing more damage than good. I think the NCAA, Jim, is in quicksand. I don't think there's any saving it. If, in fact, this committee that was announced last week, this advisory council, in quotes, of the Big Ten and the SEC is in reality like a meeting of the five mob families to figure out how they're going to divide up the territory and reorganize the sport, the sooner the better, because this has been an inevitability probably for the last 40 years since Oklahoma won its case against the NCAA back in the 80s over television rights, but certainly since the turn of the century. So, like, let's just get to it. Like, don't let the patient suffer. Just pull the plug and get us to whatever comes next.
Well, that leads to, and I was going to ask you about that. For those who don't know, the Big Ten and Southeast Conference said they are going to create, what they call it, an advisory committee.
Yeah.
As I saw, somebody said that's because the name Alliance was used a couple years ago when it was the Pac-12, Big Ten, and the ACC were going to play games or do something together. But anyway, you're right. We've talked about it. The Southeast Conference and the Big Ten are the two elephants in the room. And if those two conferences, say, decided we're separating, it's going to happen.
Yeah, what this really is this is what is called in the world a sit down in the back of a nice pizzeria somewhere in Little Italy. Okay. The whoever is involved in those discussions, that is the quintessential smoke-filled room in which the future of college football is going to be decided.
So is the answer, Chris, exactly that, where whether it's elimination of the NCAA or just simply, hey, we're going to take football and separate it from all the other sports, separate it from the NCAA, and we're going to create our own thing where, you know, you use the numbers that there's approximately 60-some, you know, schools. I think I looked it up. If you go by the power conferences, I believe there's six as of this past season. I think there's 68 teams, 69 if you count Notre Dame as the independent. Do those teams just lift up and separate themselves from the NCAA? Is that the answer?
Well, I think the number is probably even smaller than that. I think the number of teams that are going to be able to compete on the financial level we're probably looking at for the future of college football might be half the number you just gave. So I really think you're going to see the Big Ten and the SEC separate themselves from everyone else. And then, you know, maybe it's like, you know, the scene in The Dark Knight where the Joker breaks the pool cue in half, and the, whoever's left gets to fight to see who takes the last remaining spots. But I, you know, there are going to be a fair number of schools, potentially some who are currently members of those conferences, who decide that we don't want to play. You know, there's precedent for it in the Big Ten, where at one point the University of Chicago just said, hey, you know what, guys, like, we're a university. We're not a pro sports franchise. We're out. We're done. And, you know, you could potentially see a school like Northwestern maybe making that decision. I don't say it's going to happen, but it might. But I do think that's the direction that it's going to go.
And at that point,
which kind of sucks, by the way, like, if you think what we have now is indistinguishable from college football as you've known it, wait a few more years.
Well, if that happened, if Northwestern or a Vanderbilt say, we don't want any part of this, I think everyone will say, okay, that's fine.
Sure.
Do you think the powers to be would say, hey, Northwestern, you're not wanted. Vanderbilt, you're not wanted.
It's possible. I think, again, like, this is all of this stuff is so complicated, Jim. I love talking about it, and part of me hates talking about it on the radio because I feel like I need it. You need an hour of background just to really understand it. Because one of the questions is, how involved are the universities going to be if these are going to continue to be partially alliances of academic institutions? There are a lot of reasons to not kick Northwestern University out of that group. But purely from a football standpoint, you know, everybody needs a couple of Washington Generals on their schedule too. So I think those are reasons why, if those schools want to participate, if Purdue wants to come along for the ride, for whatever number of reasons, there are reasons to keep them in the fold, and you don't want to fight a legal battle over whether or not you're going to kick them out. I think it's more likely that you would see opt-outs than kick-outs.
Well,
but who knows?
See, I think money still rules, you know, Stanford, that academic institution, what conference did they just join? Because it advances their academics? Do you think they joined the ACC? No, it was for the financial benefit. So I don't think the Northwesterns and the Vanderbilts are going to go away of their own accord. I think too much money at stake. And I don't think the powers to be will kick them out for the reason that you said. I like the way you put it. We need a couple Washington Generals on the schedule. We need to feel good about ourselves and know we have a win. So I don't think people will choose to vote them off the island. But I think if you separate those schools, and if you said, okay, the Southeast Conference and Big Ten, we're going to separate, do our own thing, I don't think they'll go off, do their own thing without Florida State and Clemson and the best schools that of the remainder conferences. So I think what you do is you take that, whether it's 64 teams, 68, whatever it is, I'd like it to be 64 teams because then I can create my divisions nice and easy. 8 divisions of 8 teams. I know this is a crazy thought. How about setting up those divisions by geography, Chris? Keeping rivalries. So if I had an 18 division, I could play 7. I could play all 7 other teams. We could do this cross-division thing. I know this sounds a little bit like the NFL model. Give me 4 more games. And I have 1 game left on my schedule that, you know what, those podunk you who come into town for a payday, they still get that chance for the 1 payday. And there's my 12-game schedule. I have 8 divisions. At the end of the season, I have 8 division winners make the playoffs, maybe 4 wild cards, and I get my 12-team playoff again. What do you think?
Again, in terms of pie in the sky, everything's on the table. That is as reasonable a transformation of the sport as you can suggest. The big fly in the ointment is the money, right? The source of the money to fund this change is television networks. And the willingness and interest is just not there to fund about half the teams you imagine being part of that scenario. So that's why you're looking at the Big Ten and the SEC separating themselves farther and farther from everyone else, irrespective of the brands or the tradition or the fan bases or any of that.
All right, Chris, that's going to have to be it for quarter number three. There's still a lot more to do to fix college football. We'll come back in quarter four and do that. Stay tuned. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We are in the process of fixing college football. Chris, I took a lot of notes. I told you what I would do with perhaps putting in the NFL model for the top half. I said 64 teams, I think, would be my ideal. You brought up the fact that, you know, is there the money to support it? I think if you set up this kind of thing, I kind of think there would be. And if you say there's not enough money to support like all 64 of those teams, I think the issue then becomes the top 32. Are they happy beating up on each other? There has to be a bottom half. There's a curve when you play, you know, football in a conference, any sport in a conference. Someone has to be in the bottom. I think those top 32 teams would prefer to win. But here's what I want to do for quarter number four. I want to name you the czar, the head honcho, the big cheese, the big enchilada. You are in charge of college football, Chris, and you can mandate things. As long as you're not going to run afoul of the legal system, what would you do if you were czar of college football?
Okay, well, in all likelihood, I'm going to break a couple of laws here, Jim, but I'll clarify it when I do. So a term we are starting to see thrown around more and more in conversations around college football is private equity. Okay, you're going to keep hearing that term if you're dialed into conversations about the future of the sport. And we've heard speculation that Florida State is exploring engaging with private equity to help buy their way out of the ACC. By the way, earlier you asked about indicators of the health of the sport. When one team wants to leave its bad, dying conference so badly that they want to get BlackRock involved with their university, that may be an indication that everything is not hunky-dory, okay? But the last thing you want as a college football fan is private equity getting involved in the sport. Because what does private equity do? It finds and relentlessly, mercilessly exploits inefficiencies. And to my point earlier, my belief is that the inefficiencies, the quirks, are what make the sport great and distinct from the NFL. They are features, not bugs. So this is my old head vision for fixing college football to preserve that quirkiness that private equity would come in and root out. Okay? So
go for it.
Number one, we're going to revert to 2019 conferences and rules. So the rule changes, as subtle as they may have been, that have come in, they're all out. Maybe we change some things with like fair catch on kickoff or something, but we re-implement those. We bring back the Pac-12. We keep the California and the Oregon and Washington out of the Big Ten. We maintain some regionality of the sport. Scholarships across the sport are five-year grants, not year-to-year. It's a two-way commitment. You, as the player, are coming to my school. I, as the institution, am committing to you. They get everything that they get currently. So that's free tuition plus room and board, athletic training, nutrition, clothing, academic advising, and a cost of living stipend. I think a lot of people aren't even really aware that even before all these changes came in, Penn State student athletes were getting $5,000 a semester. Now, that may not be a lot compared to what some guys are raking in through NIL, but I can tell you Noble's generation would have crawled over broken glass to get $5,000 or its 1995 equivalent. In addition, every athlete gets an annual disbursement into an IRA for 5 years from the institution, plus access to financial planning and advising. So we're actually taking every scholarship athlete, not just football players, everybody. They're going in and they're sitting with a financial planner who's explaining to them what is happening with their retirement account. And they're getting advice about how to manage their money and how to make good decisions. If they have other investments that they want to make, they have access to what you or I, Jim, would pay a lot of money to get over the course of 5 years. Somebody whose sole job is to make sure that by the time they graduate from Penn State, they are completely versed in the rules and the technique of managing their finances like a pro. So that means that after their time in school was over, they would graduate not just with a nice retirement nest egg that they could access immediately at a tax penalty like any of us could do, or just roll it over and keep going with it, but probably something that distinguishes them from the vast majority of their undergraduate peers, which is like real financial knowledge and acumen. Okay. We're taking the money that's coming into the sport. We're seeing it flow back to the people who are creating the value, but we're also preserving the idea of what this thing was supposed to be to begin with, which was higher education, right? The whole idea of the university system is that it was supposed to elevate the Western world from a society to a civilization. And so we were going to give these guys not just dollars in their bank account, but the power of knowledge. Going to the actual sport, everybody gets to play 9 conference games. Sorry, SEC, we're on an equal playing field across the board. No games against FCS opponents. Eliminate divisions. Get rid of conference championship games. We have an 8-team playoff that takes the top-ranked 8 teams in the country. And we can keep the selection committee, but the proceedings are live-streamed, so there's 100% transparency about how we are getting from the group we start with in the preseason to the 8 who go to the playoffs, and we play the first round of the playoffs on campuses, second round in the bowls, and a championship game, which is played on a Saturday, like a college football is supposed to be played. So there you go. That's my pie in the sky, commissioner of college football. Preserve the quirkiness, maintain the spirit, and the high-mindedness of the grand experiment, college football. Again, I probably would run afoul of the NLRB rather quickly with that. But I think that would be a way to split the proverbial baby and create something that was more stable, that was far more equitable, and yet at the same time felt like the distinct institution of American college football that we knew and loved for decades. None of that's going to happen, and it's going to come back to this debate about employment status for athletes. Although I will say, had something like this been worked toward and instituted, starting in the early 2000s, I think everybody would have been so happy with it, and there would have been so much less negativity and attention on the deal that college athletes were getting. That system maybe could have been preserved for another 50 years before we started having this conversation about employment status.
Well, I agree. The NCAA, their issues, their mistakes were made 2 decades ago, not today. And they could have short-circuited all of these issues. Now, what you address the transfer portal by saying, hey, as a player, you're making a 5-year commitment to the school. Now, is that absolute? Are there outs to it?
I think you probably stick with the transfer rules you had before, where you could either give up a year of eligibility and retain most of your financial benefits, or you could transfer immediately, but there would be a payback to it. I think what you just want to do is put the onus on the decision in that they make initially as recruits. if we can sign 18-year-olds up to fight in the Marine Corps, we can make the decision about what college you're going to play football for consequential. So they understand when I'm signing up, yeah, I can transfer, but I'm either going to lose a year or I'm going to have to pay back some money because it's a two-way investment.
And that's where I think the compromise, why I brought up like a three-year commitment to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that works too.
I'm not, you know, totally locked in my entire collegiate career. I'm behind at my position and can never get out. If I'm only committed for 3 years, hey, I can stick it out. Maybe by then I win the position. And if not, I have an outlet. How about NIL though, Chris?
Yeah, I realized I forgot to mention NIL. The only change I would make is I would make it legal for that to be managed directly through the schools. So that you could have, and this is the direction I think it's going to go, where the athletic departments are able to help advise and direct the NIL activities. You don't have to have this pretend, like, you know, backdoor conversation with a collective. You know, it's just all above board. It's out in public. And yeah, is that going to create disparities between the haves and have-nots like we're seeing now? Like, yeah, but that has been baked into college football from the very beginning.
How about, I think at the core of all this is the tampering or the incentive to go to a school, whether it's straight out of high school or through the transfer portal. Technically, the rules are you cannot use NIL to draw a player to your school, whether a high school player or a transfer player. We know that is happening. Would you do anything about that, Chris? Would you?
Yeah, I would make it legal.
We can't police it.
Okay, yes, I would make it legal because everyone, it's happening. Everyone knows it's happening. If you were smart, the minute this became allowed, everyone knew it was going to happen. To me, the blatant hypocrisy has been one of the downfalls of the NCAA. There's this, it's an emperor has no clothes scenario. So where everyone sees and knows this thing is happening and we have to pretend like it's not. And then every once in a while, the NCAA just cherry picks a Tennessee to punish for it. And we're supposed to believe everything is A-okay. It's like, you know, Major League Baseball and steroids back in the early 2000s.
Well, the two quick points. The NCAA, they can't attack every school right now. So if you want the NCAA to do something, it is going to start with one or two schools. It's like the cop, everybody's speeding. They can't stop everybody. They stop one person, maybe that will be the deterrent. But I think the only question with NIL is if I say you're obligated 3 years to a school, will that restrict how much I make at NIL? Because no one's going to pay me more to stay at Penn State when I'm already obligated to be here for 3 years or 5 years or whatever it is. So, you know, that's where there's this crossover effect. And I think you'd still need to give players the ability to say no to that contract. I want to play as a free agent. Okay, that's fine, but we're not obligated to you either as a program. You get free agency after every year, but it's a one-year contract, or, you know, we don't have to renew you for the following year. So there's risk that comes with that for the player also, Chris. Unfortunately, we are out of time. That is it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.